Cyclocross friends! I'm about to say hello to you formally in about 30 seconds, but before I do, I want to tell you that this podcast is supported by HealthIQ, a life insurance company that celebrates the health conscious, including cyclists. Visit healthiq.com/WAP to learn more and get a free quote, or check out their life insurance FAQ page, that's frequently answered questions, to get your questions answered frequently. All right, let's get on with the show. Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 141 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, Scott Diedenbach from Bike Shop CX is joining me, and we're gonna talk about all the things I think that sort of fell through the cracks in the last month or so, or actually, and some that have come up new about last cyclocross season, about the schedule that's coming up that's been out there, but I think there have been some changes too that we're going to talk about for next year's schedule, and then also about changes to how the World Cup is going to be staged next year. There's some changes to UCI cyclocross teams that we want to talk about. So yeah, it was good to get Scott back in here and have that discussion. So hi, Scott.
Hi, Bill. That's a lot of changes.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be on Cyclocross Radio, by the way.
Thanks.
Did I get that name?
You
did I get that name right?
It's been that transitional year from a Crosshairs Radio to Cyclocross Radio. But you know, it's
well, to be
better,
honest with you,
I
wrote the name down at the top of my notes so I wouldn't forget.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's better for the Google search results.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
it keeps the confused militants and militia members away from my feed.
That's always a good thing there.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh man.
How are you doing? Hi, Scott.
I'm doing wonderful, man. We are kicking it over at Bike Shop CX, getting ready to record another episode tomorrow, and going strong, just enjoying the cyclocross off season, getting to work on lots of bikes. So there we go.
Yeah, so it's officially Cross's coming season, right? We're in it.
Yeah, it's Cross's coming season is coming, I think.
Yeah, something like that. and we got, you know, we still have our cyclocross stars out there who have taken their 2 week off seasons. You know, it's funny. I was listening to this interview with Wout Van Aert, and he was like, "Yeah, I feel really fresh and really ready to ride the bike again. You know, it was good to take that time off." And I'm like, "Dude, you were off. You weren't off your bike, because I'm looking on Strava and you're still doing like these 100-mile rides. You
right.
just weren't racing." And it was like 2 weeks since he stopped racing. I was like, this is now like the extended long, you know, off season for these guys is like 2 weeks. Yeah. And he's like fully refreshed and ready to go.
Well, if that's your job, it's just like anybody that's got 2 weeks
yeah.
vacation, right?
But you know, in the past it was like, you know, you'd sit there and Greg LeMond, who'd go and, you know, the thing was eat and don't move. And he'd put on, you know, like 30 mm-hmm. pounds and then come back and then have to, you know, use those first, you know, 3 months later and then use those early season races to lose all the weight and get back into shape.
Yeah.
It's like these guys are now like, sweet, 2 weeks back
I
in
remember
it.
Way back in the day, like this is when early 80s, the pro road racers talking about February 1st. Is the start of training day. Again,
start of
for,
training.
For
you know, you figure they're
yeah,
three
for,
races
for
in now. At that point.
Exactly. And that was the date. Everyone, you know, relaxed until February 1st and then hit it. But you're right. They used the spring classics as training.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And not anymore. Now it's like you better be winning. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Got to get Wout to win. Wout, you know, I'm not a big road racing fan anymore, but Wout winning Paris-Roubaix would draw my attention for sure.
Yeah. That would be something.
Yeah.
That would certainly be something.
Amazing. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. But we
and
are.
And what
going,
else are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about, I guess we should just start talking about the schedule.
Yeah, let's do
should
that.
Should we do that,
like,
or
that
should
idea.
We save
yeah.
that, because we could sit there? Because
we got some controversial topics. And
yeah.
Those should be at the end.
Yeah. So let's talk about the schedule, you know, but I was saying, even with that alone, yeah, for just a little behind the scenes for people, it's now 9 50 in the morning, and you and I were going to record at 9. So we're already 50 minutes in on stuff that talking about all of this, but not
there's
hitting 50 record.
Minute, 50 minutes of hidden content somewhere on the intrawebs.
Yes.
Oh, well.
I know people are going to be like, why don't you just do that too? And I'm like, well,
because some of that stuff is not, you know, Bill's language is.
Exactly. Oof. Exactly. That's what it all comes down to. But hey, let's talk about the 2019-2020 domestic, so for us, U.S. cyclocross schedule.
Yeah, where am I going to be driving in the van? That's what I want to know.
And I will say this, and I kind of mentioned it on the last show because it's this huge dilemma that I'm going through right now, in that, you know, we always joke about the roadies always complain about cyclocross starting too early, and then we, you know, sit there and joke about these, like we just talked about, these February road races that are like the same weekend as cyclocross world championships.
Right.
The mountain bike, I'm not even joking about it, the pro mountain bike schedule is killing me. Especially
it's
this
like,
year.
It's all year. Why did they even have a season?
Well,
it's just,
you know,
all year.
At least they had already, last year, the first World Cup was like this week because it was in South Africa and they were trying to match it up with Cape
Epic. Right.
So it was like in March, which was just crazy early. It's a little farther down the road. Although the domestic mountain bike season starts in, you know, it's Benelli is the first big UCI race in California, and that's in like a week and a half. I'll be out there, you know, covering that. Pretty stoked to be going to that race for the first time. So, but that's
fat
like,
bike season isn't even over yet.
Yeah, so we're already in it. But if we go to the end of mountain bike season, which I'm, you know, more concerned about, we have this awesome thing happening in North America this year for mountain biking. We have the world championships at Mount St. Anne in Ontario. So it's which is just so cool. But
that is very cool.
We can't, you know, it's the same weekend as Go Cross.
So what do you do? What are you going to pick?
I don't know. I honestly am undecided on this so far. I really want to go to Worlds. I really, really, really want to go to Worlds.
For you, Go Cross is very close.
Go Cross is close. We've worked with them in the past. They, you know, we were able to have this whole media spread for them last year, which was really awesome, and it was a great race, and it's amazing to watch that race grow. And I want to be there. I mean, I want to be back in Roanoke for that race. I also want to be at Mount St. Anne for Worlds, you know. So that's a tough one. And that's just to get into it. That's where we're starting the season in Roanoke, August 31st, September 1. Great race, great kickoff to the season. You know, in the past they've had these programs where all women race for free. They were one of the first races to have the women race last on the schedule. You know, so they have a lot of things that they're doing there that are really cool. It's Virginia's Blue Ridge, so they have integrated into the community in that the tourist board is actually sponsoring the race and brings a lot of resources to it and makes it into a big race, and it's a nice little template that I think we could use in other parts of the country to not be adverse to the parks and the tourists and everything and be a burden on them, but actually work with them and make it so cyclocross is a good thing that people want to promote. So, so that's...
And you went to this last year, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember you saying it was really good.
Yeah, and it's in a park that is half of the track was on a permanent cyclocross course.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit far for me to get to that one, I think, that early in the season because, you know, we still end up with September being... And we should mention, Bill, that this is, as always, at this time of year when we see the schedule on the UCI page, This is almost like an outline.
Yeah, right? And it's
things
and
always
even,
change when we're looking at the schedule at this
and
point.
And we even purposefully did not do this in January.
Right.
You know, and it's
but
now
we can still
March.
Know that this is not going to be the final.
Right. And we're still looking at this. You know, you and I were both looking at this and going,
wait a minute.
I'm not sure that's right.
Well, for instance, so people get an idea of what we're talking about, there's no U.S. Nationals on the schedule.
Right.
Obviously, that is going to change at some point, right?
And so which, of course, if you want to, you know, put your, I don't think it's a conspiracy, but if you want to, like, raise alarms on that, is it because the UCI is going to go back now and
push and
enforce their rules that all national championships have to be on the same, you know, like we got this 1 year change, but now we're going back? Or, you know, I can't believe that for people in Tacoma that they would not know the date that their race is going to be on, but who knows?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's, well, we know it's not there. So, and it probably will be. So we'll see. And then the first C1 is going to be Rochester again.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Always a great race. Didn't get to it last year as I was attending the Alma GP, but I am planning on going to it this year. So I'm excited. It is one of only four C1s on the U.S. schedule this year, Bill.
Yeah, definitely a change there with the C1s where we were trying to figure it out. Well, we were like six or seven last year, and now we're down to four.
Four, yeah. Plus, and this is plus the World Cup. Part of the reason why that got skewed so much, because it used to be pretty consistently seven or eight C1s in the U.S. And that's probably, being realistic, that's probably too high of a number. But, you know, it's four now plus the World Cups. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to, we used to not have any World Cups, but we had seven C1s. So in a way, there's still six races that are C1s or higher in the U.S.
Right,
so
but only four of them are C1s. And there was, you know, there's a little confusion about how this all went down. There are rules for C1s that have requirements for different nationalities in there. And the way, and I think that we are as guilty as everybody else in saying this is a, and I'm finger quoting here, new rule. It wasn't actually a new rule. It was always in there that you needed, what is it, like five different nationalities and 10
riders from at least five countries,
right.
I think is what it is.
Yeah. The rule,
and that's in your event as a whole,
right? So men's and women's.
So men and women, yeah. right.
And then I guess it will include juniors as well this year, junior men, yeah. Since that's a requirement. Yeah. But
at least, so that's my understanding.
Right.
I don't know that that's like a perfect, interpretation of it, but that was kind of what everyone was saying.
And then, so that rule always exists. It was never enforced. UCI came out in a memo and said, hey, we're enforcing it this year. And they did that in the middle of the cyclocross season. So these races that happened before that came out were a little bit screwed in that they couldn't sort of retrofit their rosters and you know, basically get enough people there to meet the requirements, which I know all the races would have done. And the result of that is that we have some races that were C1s that are now C2s, and not to jump ahead, but, you know, Charm City, I think, is the biggest one that gets hit by this, that they are now a C2.
Yeah.
You know, and we had heard, derogation was the word that we heard, that they were going to, since the rule enforcement memo came out really late, that the feeling at the federation level was that UCI was going to give these races a pass this year. And basically this was the year that you got to get all your ducks in a row and then meet all the requirements. And then next year, if you didn't do it, you weren't going to be able to be a C1. Looking at the schedule, it looks like that didn't happen, and that these requirements were put into place, you know, for this season. And if you didn't meet them last season, tough luck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you know that, or did some of them? I mean, is it possible some races were just like, you know what? We'll just be a C2, and that's fine.
That is not the impression that I got sitting in the directors' meeting after Louisville Nationals. When we saw the preliminary schedule, you know, it's this little dance that goes on. All the promoters, you know, everybody wants their dates. We kind of work together and we figure out. And then, you know, you see on that schedule who's a C1, who's a C2, who's going to be the, you know, and all that. And no, there are races that I think believed and even were listed by USA Cycling at that time in that meeting on that preliminary schedule as C1s that are now C2s. There have been times in the past where we've gone into that meeting and there was a race that was like, I'm going to be a C1. I've, you know, listed as myself as a C1, and then they see their name on the preliminary schedule and it says C2 next to it. It was a little awkward moment that happened many years back, and they're like, there's a typo on there. I'm supposed to be a C1, and you know, whoever's running the money is like, we're going to have to talk about that one. But that was, you know, in that particular case, it was a new race that wanted to jump in as a C1, and the deal is you have to start as a C2 and move up. So it wasn't they kind of should have known.
So let's say what are the four C1s on the schedule as it sits right now? So we mentioned Rochester, right?
Yep. Jingle
then
Cross.
There's the Sunday race at Jingle Cross. So that's the one after the World Cup. Cincy and Reno.
Right.
Are the four that as it sits right now. So there we go. Since he met that requirement pretty, you know, they met it this year, even though they were like right. I think that was like the week that the UCI made that announcement
or something.
So they really didn't have time. But they met it anyways.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris Aiken.
Thank you, Chris Aiken. Yeah.
And I from Australia.
Yeah, drove him there from and so here's the other thing I want to mention on the schedule, but or did you want to go through race by race, or can we just jump around?
Let's just jump around.
All right. One of the things I want to mention, and we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, is what they did with the Reno Sacramento weekend. I think that's a really good thing that's on the schedule this year.
It is a, you know, of course, it goes up against DCCX, which is the only reason, which is fine. It's a California race and a, you know, West Coast and an East Coast race with Reno on that Friday night. The only thing that kind of bums me out about it is that I like going to Reno. I like the people who run that race. I think they do an awesome job, and it was something that I had been planning on going. And this is one of those races that I think we need to put a sort of a penciled in asterisk next to. I know this looks really good and it's a nice place for them to be. I'm not positive that's the date that they're going to end up on. I think that they may still end up on a weekend.
All right. Because for right now, some people know they're on a Friday.
Yeah.
They are the Friday before Sacramento. So, but it's, I believe I looked it up on Google Maps. I think it's 130 miles. So it's about a 2-hour drive, you know, so you could easily race Friday and drive to Sacramento. You know.
Okay.
Yes,
it's a night race. And redefine easy for me, because I got to see, you know, granted I didn't go every year, but I at least got to see the last year of DeVu Harbin weekend. And that's how many miles between?
Right. Four.
4 miles between. And the race ends at what time?
I don't know.
Five PM maybe. So but the, you know, from the organizers having to, you know, tear down infrastructure and move it over to the other site to every
but
team.
But I don't think they have to do that, do
they? No, they don't have to do that, but think about the teams. Think about like teams what teams had to do, and they did not like it. Think about you know, at that point, Rafa and Cannondale and all these, you know, and Donnelly and all these teams with these alpha, with these big infrastructures, tents and everything, and they have to pack all of that up at 5 p.m., sprint over to the other park, you know, a half hour away, get out the headlights, you know, the lamps on everybody, and then set up again everything that night so that when riders showed up in the morning, they had a place to go and were ready to race. How do you do that when you have a night race that ends at, I believe, the curfew in that it's like 10 or 11 o'clock? So basically you're packing down midnight, showing up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and then having to set everything up in Sacramento again?
I'm hoping Sacramento starts a little bit later on Saturday.
Yeah.
If I was them, I would do that.
But I mean, it sounds like an awesome idea. It's difficult,
but at least it's possible. Yeah. I don't know what's better, that or having it, say, a weekend apart where you're missing something else or you're traveling, you know, because maybe you're coming from, I'm assuming, you know, part of the attraction for all this is for the trying to balance things out for the West Coast racers, which I think is a good idea. But, you know, so say you're coming from the Northeast, right? Well, now you either have to drive down two different weekends all the way down there, right? Instead of just making it one trip.
Yeah.
There's not a perfect solution. I think it's possible to do it, you know, Friday night to Saturday. It would be tough. Yeah, you're right. I think it's not going to be easy, but you could go in with a small setup on Friday, race Friday night, and then get out of there, I think.
Yeah.
And get to Sacramento. It's at least within the realm of possibility to do, you know. So
I'm going to quickly go through the rumors that are out there, unconfirmed.
Oh, wait, there's no rumors in cycling?
It's crazy. Couple things. One, no HPCX on the schedule now. Second, longest running UCI race in the U.S.
Yikes.
I don't know if this is what's going on there. I feel like city-wise, there may have been some sort of scheduling conflict. Again, I don't know the story. I could be completely wrong, and this could just pop up at any time. But for right now, HPCX, not on the schedule. Mm-hmm. You have Nittany on the schedule. I hope that happens. I've heard some little talk out there that might not happen. I don't know that for sure. Just sort of what's out in the wind. Same thing with Starcross, which was happening September 28th in Redmond. From what I understand, again, could be completely wrong on this. I believe that is not happening. So that's another C2 West Coast C2 race that may not happen. And you know, one of these races that was a C1 last year that I hope is just, you know, that we've run into this UCI scheduling, some things are here, some things aren't, which is a big one, is NBX is not on the schedule at all. And that was a C1, C2 weekend last year, one of the oldest New England races. So hopefully that's just, you know, some sort of didn't make it oversight onto the schedule, but we're still waiting to see on that one. But that also may be a race that did not meet the C1 regs, got knocked down to a C2, and maybe they've made the decision they weren't going to be a UCI race at all. I mean, that's the thing that we don't know with a lot of these races. They still may happen, but just not have that UCI designation. So I don't know. But those are the things that stick out to me that we'll try to get to the bottom of this in the coming weeks as this thing continues to solidify. You know, at the end of the schedule, I will just say, as long as we're on that, the other C1 that it seems to now be a C2 will be Ruts and Guts, which is a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. I think those added a little bit to the end of the season this past year, I think, and made things a little bit different and interesting. But then the other thing, you're mentioning the races that aren't on the schedule, but one of the new things on the schedule is October 5th and 6th, Fayetteville.
Yes. Yes.
C2. And that is on there, of course, because of the Worlds announcement, right?
Yeah, definitely.
They're not going to have Worlds there in 2022, not having some kind of build up to that. So double C2, which I'm sure is partly about, you know, getting starting to learn how you're going to do a course on in that area.
C2, right? Now, I got to believe that they are going to meet the requirements. And, you know, this is year one of a C2, that they're going to try to be a C1. And even before Worlds, they have may have their designs on other even bigger races than that going forward. I just feel like the organization there that was able to get Worlds and make that kind of economic commitment to commitment, to that race is definitely looking beyond just a C2 designation. Who knows, maybe they want, you know, a World Cup, maybe they want nationals there, you know. I mean, we'll see what happens going forward.
But yeah, and starting out as a C2 is what makes perfect sense if you were doing all that.
Yep.
So there you go. All right. What else? Anything else? When's DCCX, Bill? I might come this year.
You came last year.
So, oh, that's right. I got to skip it. I got to skip a year.
That's right. No. That's right. Only every other course is Providence. Where's
another glaring thing missing is no Louisville.
Yeah. Well, we knew that was happening.
Yeah.
That Nationals was the cyclocross swan song for
Louisville.
For Louisville. So we knew that they were kind of out. They you know, speaking to Louisville Sports Commission and everyone there, they were really happy with Nationals, but even before that happened, they were kind of like, this is going to be the period at the end of the sentence as far as Louisville cyclocross goes for a while. They won't say,
well, for UCI, we should
for
say,
UCI,
right? Because
yeah,
I think it'll still be a OVCX.
For sure.
They'll still have
for sure.
Storm Eva Bannman and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as UCI goes, they're not opposed to doing it in the future, but for now, they are definitely... They're taking a break.
Taking a break.
DCCX is, we finally, for years, we've been wanting to go back-to-back with Charm City. You know, we're a little bummed that Charm City right now is a C2 rather than a C1, still trying to figure out if there's a way to get back on the schedule as a C1. But for now, Charm City, October 12th. And 13th, followed up the next weekend by DCCX, October 19th and 20th. Our plan is to try to figure out something to do midweek to entice people to stay for that two-week period. It is a UCI. It is one of two. Vittoria series is one UCI series in the U.S. The other UCI series in the U.S. is the Parkway series that includes four race days between Charm City and DCCX. We got, you know, a lot of cash on the line for the Parkway series, and we're trying to figure out a way to have a fun midweek race in there as well to give people the incentive to come to the East Coast, come to the Mid-Atlantic, to the Baltimore, D.C. area to stay. We got lots of places to train, lots of, you know, opportunities here to kind of make it a little four race cyclocross block.
I was just going to say, if only you had a nice, really big garage to race in.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe.
I hope that was okay.
That was okay to say. That is my, I'll put it out there. I'll put it out there publicly, and maybe this will, even though I haven't really talked to to my fellow organizers about that. Well, I was talking about this, you know, you got like it's not Ice Weasels. What is it? What's the Collins race in there? That's kind of the midweek race. Yeah. Anyway, so that middle, I was thinking, well, what if we just had
Night Weasels?
What if we just had a big money garage race, garage race event? You know, of course, I haven't even asked Crystal City about it, but I'm putting it out there as a possibility, and that could be our midweek.
Just putting out feelers to see if there's interest.
That could be a midweek race, you know?
How cool
that could get somebody
be?
to stick around, maybe, and from the UCI level and race all of our races. It's an unsanctioned race. You don't have to worry about it. Just get in there.
Yeah.
Come home with a little cash.
Race in a garage.
Race in a garage.
You'll love it. Also still on the schedule, Major Taylor, always, I got to throw it in there, Bill. It's one of my favorite races every year.
College.
Indy Cycleplex. Yes. Still a C2 and always a great fun race. So,
yeah.
What else?
Yeah, that's the same week as Major Taylor. You know, the end of the week, we're sort of, it looks like at the end of the season, they've flip-flopped. So, and it actually what's kind of cool now is that you have the three UCI races leading up to Nationals are not competing with each other this year. North Carolina is November 23rd, 24th. Ruts and Guts is November 30th and December 1st. And then Resolution is December 7th, December 8th. And then everybody heads to the Pacific Northwest for Nationals. That the flip-flop was last year, Resolution was before Ruts and Guts. This year, it's after.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Oh, I know what else we should mention, Bill, is November 9th and 10th in Midland, Ontario, Pan Am Championships.
Yeah, you know, the one issue there that I know Adam Meyerson is a little bummed out about, that he probably will not be, well, not probably, he won't be able to defend his Pan Am Championships because it's the same date as his race, which is the Northampton International. So, you know, a conflict there, but yeah, I'm looking forward to going back. I think that they did a nice job at Pan Am's. I think they have a lot of room to grow. And what I'm hoping is that it becomes more of a destination. I know that's what they want, that, you know, for riders as well. And that there are jerseys to give away up and down the Masters ranks is should really be an incentive for people to go there. It was crazy this last year where you had some of these categories where, not to say that they weren't great racers, but, you know, I talked to some people who are Pan Am champions right now who are like, oh yeah, you know, I live about an hour away, really just race some mountain bikes, but I thought this looked like fun, and just sort of drove over and went home with a Pan Am championship, which could be like a lifetime goal for somebody. So, you know, this is definitely something for our listeners out there, that's a great opportunity. You know, travel to Canada, go up to, you can race the Silver Goose one day and then the Pan Am Championship the next day, and you may find that the level of competition is, you know, the same or maybe just a notch higher than what you're seeing at your local races. So why not do it?
Yeah, absolutely. For anytime there's a jersey on the line, it's like, go for it. You know, I mean, points wise
for the UCI, this, you know, on paper, it doesn't turn out to be in reality. On paper, this is a bigger race than Nationals.
Right. Right. Points wise for sure.
Yeah. I mean, even in Europe, nobody treats it that way. That's the national championships still mean that much more to actually have your nation's jersey. But, you know, it is a prestigious thing to win.
One other thing we should mention just quickly on the schedule is that, as usual, we're used to this every year, is the Jingle Cross Trek World Cups switching order.
Yeah.
That happens every year because of Iowa football, I think, is the main driving thing. The police can't cover two events of that size on the same day. So we're back to Jingle Cross being the 13, 14, 15 and Trek being 20, 21, 22, but there's no UCI racing on the 21st like it's been.
So. Yeah, so Saturday at Trek is always Legends races and just sort of a fun day, really.
Some USAC stuff. Yep.
Really looking forward to Trek,
which I am very excited about. Trek this year.
Yeah.
Trek might have been was probably my favorite race last year after DCCX, of course.
Oh, of course.
But Trek, I thought Trek was, I don't know what it was, but it kind of took a jump up in excitement and fun, I think, last year.
I hope
so. That was really cool.
And I think that this year we may have a much larger wide-angle podium contingent there. So we can have like our first wide-angle podium family reunion at Trek.
We can fill my van and do some recording.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's going to be good. It's the wide angle podium takeover of the Trek World Cup and Trek CXC Cup.
We should see about getting a place that we can do it. And it's not like last year we did it in like the media parking lot where there is no one around.
It's true. We'll see. We'll work on that. I think we may have to have some off air conversations about that. I think
that would be amazing. Yeah. Yeah, that would be amazing. So cool. All right. I'm getting excited, Bill. That's what this show is all about.
Fantastic.
Getting you excited.
Anything else we need to talk about the schedule? We should probably this should be like a monthly check-in that we do. We can let's meet here on April 7th. And we will go over the domestic schedule again.
The changes to the domestic schedule. Yeah. But, well, so interestingly, since, we can move on, but you mentioned points.
Yes.
But let's talk about points in the World Cup staging.
This was a big deal
that
just came down last week. The change is, so, you know, how it works now is everybody amasses all of their UCI points early in the season, and then that's how your staging for any UCI race is determined. So if you are number one in the world or number one through eight in the world, you're going to be on the first row of a UCI race wherever you go. You know, you want to go race in Japan, yep. It's a UCI race, you're ranked in the top whatever, that determines where you are in the grid. In other sports, specifically mountain biking, when it comes to the World Cup series, the UCI rankings are thrown out the window, and instead it just goes by your World Cup rankings. So that's why you'll get people dropping in and they're all of a sudden at the back, even though they may be great athletes. You can't get this thing like I swear, you know, Niels Albert is still ranked in the world on the UCI somehow. Right. Somehow those points just keep like, you know.
And Sven, of course.
Yeah, yep. they're still, you'll look, you'll be like, didn't that person retire? Yet they're still up there. That's not going to be the case for these World Cups. It's going to be... And I'm assuming that they're going to start on, so the first race will be based on how the World Cup standings ended up last year.
Yeah.
And then that's what we're going to line up for. And I think the biggest thing that this does is that sometimes, and I know there is criticism out there from some in the U.S., but also people in Europe looking at North American riders who have raced a UCI schedule in North America and have accumulated a lot of points, and then they are put into these World Cup races, and some would say are unfairly staged near the front for where they actually stack up to the rest of the competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's most prevalent in the U.S. men.
Correct.
We see it time and time again, first or second row start, and then they finish 30th or something, you know. So we see that often enough. I don't think we see it as much for the U.S.
No, and
the
women. This is something I think sticks out a lot more in the men's for sure, where the women, I think it's going to, there's going to be a pretty equal correlation, and we can check here comparatively from where they are as ranked in the UCI versus where they are ranked in the World Cups. But if you look, you know, just to sort of show what we're talking about, if you look at the final UCI, this is all UCI racing rankings in the world. Mm-hmm. The Curtis White is the first American, and he is ranked 16th in the world. Awesome.
Okay. Top 20. This is UCI points.
UCI points. So Curtis White is 16th. Kerry Werner is 22nd. And then Gage Hecht. I mean, we'll sort of discount him since he's still U23. 26th, and then Stephen Hyde 35th. Mm-hmm. But you know, if we look at Curtis White, that's a second row start at a World Cup
right.
this year.
Right.
If you go to the final World Cup rankings, which is what this staging is now going to be based on, so this is not racing against your American peers, but racing against the world.
Other World Cup racers.
Other World yes. Cup racers. Curtis White is, and actually moved up. He was 37th. He ended the season 33rd.
Right.
So that puts him on the fifth row.
Yeah.
Where he was on the second row.
Right.
That's kind of the reality of what happens here. You know, Stephen Hyde.
And that pushes like Hyde and Warner back to 45 and 46.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
And I think, I think it's more fair.
Yeah.
I think it's a more fair way to do it for World Cups. I think, you know, you could be a rider who doesn't have a bunch of UCI races within quick that they can get to easily, right? Not just in the U.S., but anywhere, right? But maybe you can get to the World Cups consistently and you do well, but you just don't have this opportunity to amass large amounts of UCI points. I think it makes it way more fair for that.
Oh, yeah.
For that it also, rider,
you look at guys like Johnny Vermeersch, who had a great year this year, who was, mm-hmm. well, let's see, he was... ended up 10th in the mm-hmm. in the world overall for UCI. If you look at where he ended up in the World Cups, it was 15th. So he's dropping down possibly a row, maybe not, but the thing is, the reason that he ended up there is he skipped the US. He didn't come to the US. He didn't race Trek, he didn't race Jingle. That kept him, you know, you figure looking based on where he's at, that's another 80 points that puts him probably in the top 10
mm-hmm.
for what he where he was ending up normally. I mean, the as always, the guy who breaks the curve is Vanderpoel, who skipped three World Cups, six. So he ended up third. So if that's your strategy, I'm not going to race all of them, but I'm just going to win everyone that I do race.
But everyone I do race, yeah,
then,
I
then you're
win.
Okay. If that's the strategy you want to employ, then you can do that and still be, you know, on the front row. For humans,
but if you look at,
for humans, not exactly doable.
Not going to happen. But if you look at our starting row would be Tone, Wout, Matthew, Corne Van Kessel, Quinten Hermans, Lars Vandehaar, Lauren Sweek, and Michael Vandernoot.
Yeah.
That's a great starting row. Right.
That's kind of,
you can't argue with that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and you look at the top eight, you got Vanderpoel, Van Aerts, Michael Van Turnout, Lars Vandehaar, Lauren Sweek, Quinten Hermans, Corne Van Kessel. That's who ended up overall UCI. So it,
right.
You know,
right. So that would put, yeah, those guys would be up in that mix, pushing other guys back.
Yeah.
It would just, there's Michael Boros. He's 14th, so that's second row now.
Right.
That's cool. See, that's a well-deserved. Also may encourage more Europeans to not skip the U.S. World Cups.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Now we look at here's the interesting other side of this, where it pays off for Americans who excel in the World Cup. Katie Keough ends mm-hmm. the season 7th in the world UCI overall.
Mm-hmm.
World Cup, she's 4th.
There you go.
So
much more solidly in the front row. I mean, both are front row, but. Yeah.
Look at somebody like Katie Compton, who is not happy with her season, right? Somebody who was disappointed mm-hmm. in the way this season went, ended up 18th in the world overall for the UCI. Katie Compton did not race in the U.S., but for a couple races in the start, and was racing against a higher level of competition in Europe all year long, ended up 18th overall. So she those easy points, they're not easy points. I don't get mad at me for saying that.
But you
know what I'm saying, aren't available for her because she's racing against, you know, Mariana Voss and Sonny Kant and Denise Betsema every week. But then you turn around and you look at where she is in the World Cup. And gosh, I just saw her and now I lost it. Oh, she's eighth. So she's on the front row. So even though she's racing against this much better competition, so she's much lower overall, she is putting in better results in these World Cup races and therefore is going to still start in the front row. So it's basically what we see, you know, when you travel around the US and you have these local series and they stage by local points, you know, by series points. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we're doing now on the World Cup level. Scott?
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
Here's my devil's advocate.
Okay.
They've done this for a year. We'll look at it and they always go, okay, this is good. This is equity. You know, this is where everybody should be. What is the biggest criticism of cyclocross on the men's side right now?
The biggest criticism?
Of the racing.
Oh, man.
Of the racing.
That it's all spread out and boring.
Why?
Because of Matthew Vanderpool.
Right. Because the top guy is always...
I'm not saying I agree with
that. No, I know. But that's the criticism, right? Is that the top guy just runs away and it's not fun to watch.
Yeah.
Mountain biking had this same issue with Nino Scherter.
Sure.
And then... And in mountain biking, it's a lot... You see it a lot more. Like we talk about, you know, you want to have a good start or else you're going to get left behind. It's basically that first bottleneck and your race could be over in cyclocross. But it's really not as severe... There are still guys who are able to fight their way back to the front as a race goes on.
Yeah.
In mountain biking, it's much harder. Like once you get to that first spot where people are, you know, forced off their bike or somebody gets something wrong, that front group is just gone.
Yeah.
The only guy who I've seen been able to erase deficits and make it to a front in a mountain bike race is Matthew Vanderpool. Again. The same guy who's, you know,
right.
Strategy is just win everything, then you don't have to race
just
everything.
Just win everything.
Yeah. So again, even on the mountain biking, put him to the side. But the problem was that they staged by World Cup. So you had the same, you know, best riders in the front, and it started to get to a point where people thought the racing was boring because it was just the same two or three guys who were on the front row who were getting out front. So what mountain biking did is they introduced short track racing so that it gave an opportunity for other riders to be in that front row. They would take the top eight from the short track race and put them in the front row. And then you started with your World Cup rankings in the next row. So the worst you can do is if you screw up and you're a top rider is you're in the second row.
Right.
This made it really exciting, especially you know, on the men's side, but also on the women's side, where short track is something that the U.S. does really well. We basically invented this sport. So you have...
Like crit racing.
Yeah, you had people like Aaron Huck and Chloe Woodruff who may not be... in the front row straight up for World Cup points, but could do really well in the short track and then earn themselves a place on the front row. And this was, you know, at first we didn't know what to think about short track and it seemed kind of weird and the riders didn't know what to think. But I think as the season went on, they started to embrace it. They get UCI points for it, for the overall. Mm-hmm. Plus there's an opportunity for riders who may not be able to be at the front to all of a sudden get a front row start.
Yeah.
So that way, you know, it is not just the same people up there. So a very long story that's going to continue to get longer is that...
It's very interesting, though. I'm on the edge of
this
my seat.
This is an opportunity for it, but I think it is a fairer system. in that they went.
So are you worried then that it's going to make the separation and not a lot of racing worse?
Yeah, but the thing is, I think a couple things. Cyclocross is different in what is prioritized, in that in mountain biking, the World Cup is everything. Yeah. That is what people race for. They may do some other races outside of that, but it's really, that is your season. It's those six, seven, eight races, whatever it is, up to, that is what people race for. And then they race for world championships, and every 4 years they race for the Olympics. That's how mountain biking works at that level. For cyclocross, it's, you know, A, we don't worry about the Olympics. B, there are racers out there who, you know, somebody like Sven, it was great that he won too, but basically it was like, what, I don't care, you know, the World Cup is, I don't do as well, you know, world champions, I don't do as well, but I'm gonna win the Super Prestige every year, I'm gonna win the Dave Vey every year, you know, there are other things that are priorities for them. So in that case, I think it's a little skewed, but I think it's good that you have the best, you know, you have a place where everybody's racing against each other, and you can base the rankings on that alone without all of these. You can't go point hunting. There's no more point hunting in World Cups.
Yes.
So that's
right for World Cup.
Yeah.
World
so Cup, that's yes. one part of it. And then what I'm saying about, you know, giving other people an opportunity to be up there, I guess my thing is, how do we incorporate something like short track into cyclocross to then give them the opportunity to bring some excitement into it, and maybe have somebody who can like excel at a 2-lap race? I don't know, that you have like on a Friday night, and then that allows people to get a front row start. But
you could have like a sprint point like Dave Vey has, and whoever is the leader of the sprint point gets a front row start, or whoever is the, you know.
Yeah, but what I want, The difference being, I don't want it to be like you're racing somewhere else and earning a spot on the World Cup. I want it to be like, okay, we're going to have this other competition where everybody, you're still having to race against the best people, and that's good. You're racing for a staging spot, similar to what they do in short track, where it's like, okay, everybody has to race this. If you're in the, I think it's the top, you have to be in the top 40 to earn a spot to race short track. And then from that top 40 spot, you can earn a spot on the front row. I think it'd be cool to do something like that. If you're gonna go to this system where it's the World Cup rankings, which both of us like, still give an opportunity for somebody to move up there by having something else into it. It adds more
to break into that. Without winning a World Cup, how can I break into that to show what I can
do? And it brings more excitement to the sport. You know, something that, especially on the men's side, that I think people are frustrated with. Though, I don't know. It's something that I'm sure people will tell me I'm an idiot for bringing up, but I would love to try to figure out what can we do? What is the short, what is the cyclocross short track?
We like to think out of the box. Yuck. So how about just like the Deveve, on lap two of every World Cup race, there's a sprint point. Whoever's the current leader of the sprint points gets the third call up next race or something.
Yeah, so you're basically racing within the race for the call up for the next.
Yeah, so you only got to be there for 2 laps. If you can't win the overall race, you know, you got to be in there for 2 laps. I don't know. I just popped into my head. It's probably
but that's
what was your idea that you said everyone was going to hate?
having nationals in Europe.
Right. Without thinking about it, that's what I'm throwing out there.
Anyway, something to think about. But I think the main thing here is that they've gone to this new system that I think is a more fair system for staging for World Cups.
Yeah, and I think we'll see how it shakes out. I don't know. Can it make it any worse for the men's racing? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, can this really make it any worse than it is with people just riding off the front?
No.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it'll just make it better or something. I don't know. But, you know, and maybe by enticing people to come, you know, to two more of the World Cup races, there will create some kind of balance in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's going to be very interesting. I think it's a very interesting thing to see, because I think I really don't like seeing people from getting, you know, that are in the first or second row and they finish way down in the field. I think that gets kind of, I don't know. I don't know that that's real fair either. So
I agree.
Cool. What was the other topic, Bill?
This is one, you know, similar
tell us about this.
Similar to the rule that's always been there that now has been enforced. This is actually a policy change that was announced at the same time that things like the Fayetteville World Championship was announced, that I think, and maybe I just missed it, but I feel like has been not, has been undercovered or lost,
yeah,
or just not even noticed, which is a huge deal and a horrible, horrible decision by the UCI that is couching this as equality.
Yes.
And what the
completely agree.
What the UCI has done in the, and this is in the management committee memo, is that they made this announcement. I'm just going to read this language verbatim, and it says, regarding the registration of UCI cyclocross teams, the UCI will require that they comprise a minimum of 3 riders, which is what it is now, including at least 1 woman and 1 man to ensure their diversity. The change is that 1 man language.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you,
well, you know, men are being treated so unfairly.
Yes, we have to, you know, raise all boats and make sure that men are included on teams.
Right. Yeah.
It's so confounding to me that they have gone from, they are basically telling, you know, in this, a team, and, you know, the one that just comes to mind for us in the U.S., and me specifically, is the Trek Factory Racing Cyclocross team that now consists of Ellen Noble, Evie Richards, and Emma Swartz. Those are the 3 that are actually on there. Yolanda Neff raced for them as well. Mm-hmm. And the UCI is telling that team of women racers, you must have a man on your team to be a UCI team.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, it just, I don't get
it. I don't
it.
Even know what
and
to say
I,
to that.
I know.
That is just.
I know for a fact that teams, women teams have inquired about this to make sure that this, that they are reading this correctly, that,
yeah,
that there needs to be a man on every team, and the UCI has responded, yes, it will be implemented for the upcoming CX season. So the 2019-2020 season, there is a registration deadline of July 31st for you to sign up your dude on your team, if you're a
yeah,
women's only team. And and then, you know, I think that they're in May, all everybody's gonna get more information on all of this. But I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I know people are gonna be like, oh, it's hypocritical. If you're gonna have a, you know, you can't have an all men's team, then you can't have an all women's team. And I will just cry bullshit on that to the end of time until it's actually
yes,
treated equally, you know. And it's,
yeah, me too.
Ah, it just stinks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one, let's make it more difficult for women's team to exist. Yeah, let's just make it even harder for a women's team to exist. We're not going to, you know, they're going to be on the low end of any money that they can win or anything that they can get, but then we're going to make it more difficult for them than it is now. Absolute nonsense. Let's have, I think I said, Bill, let's have 30 years of women's only teams and then start talking about equality maybe or something like that. You know, I just think it's absolutely ridiculous to say that this is somehow keeping things equal. That's just, I just completely disagree with you, and I agree, complete horse crap.
And I just wonder too, and I need to do more research into this, if it's, you know, this is for UCI cyclocross team specifically, for UCI mountain bike teams, this isn't the case. And there are some amazing all women. The Ghost team is an incredible all women's team. I mean, for the past, you know, it's sad not this year, but the past 18 years, the Cliff Pro team, which was Luna before that, was an all women's team. I mean, it's just,
I mean, do we think teams are just going to be like, well, screw it, I just won't be a UCI team?
Isn't that it? I mean, why not, you know?
Yeah.
Stu Thorne's been pretty adamant that he's not sure what being a UCI team gets him.
Right.
He has the top riders in the U.S. that they're in, you know, they don't have their, if you look at the results, the team name is not listed after the rider. Is that your perk? Yeah, I mean...
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't get it. I saw that and I was just like, this is just a craziness. And it's also, it means that, I guess what it comes down to, and I need to make this point because I don't think it came across, is that you have a budget for a team, right? And now you are saying, and there is not... As you said, Scott, you know, trying to find sponsors and resources for women's teams is hard enough as it is. Now you have to take, if you only have a 3-person team, a third of your resources to sign a male rider. Right. So you're basically taking jobs away from women racers so that you can meet this idiotic requirement.
Yeah. So you could, right, instead of having 3 women, now you've got 2 women and 1 man.
Yes.
Because that's more equal. That's somehow more equal.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to get too ranty.
And what I hope happens is that you just, you know, what the women's only teams should do is just sign an espoir male rider and you give him a bike and a kit, you know, maybe not even your team, but, you know, do it like the UCI teams were doing with the women when they had to have a woman on their team. Is like, we're not going to pay you, but you get to wear our kit and, you know, we'll give you one of our, you know, secondhand bikes.
Right.
So do that.
But what does that solve?
Nothing.
What's the purpose
of
that?
Then you can put those resources into the riders you actually care about, which is kind of what happened with the Belgian UCI men's team that had to have a woman on their team.
Yeah. It was a token. Yeah.
I think it's starting to change. I just think that we've had such good momentum in that direction that this is kind of just dumb.
Yeah, I don't really see this as a step forward in any way. I just don't. So,
can I tell you something in this same memo? My favorite part of this.
Oh, geez. Wait, you mean it gets worse?
No, this is just funny. This is the how they decided to organize this memo. We're moving away from that. Rant over there. They're talking about the management committee also hailed the progress made in the fight against technological fraud. Total of 15,756 checks were carried out in 2018 with the aid of magnetic scanning tables, 647 with x-rays, you know, and then they go on to talk about next phase will involve the first test on the ground with a view to developing a first series of prototypes for some different kind of magnetic trackers. All right. So this is this, you know, hey, look how good we've done to make sure that nobody has any kind of, you know, technological assistance inside their bikes, no motors in their bikes. All right. So that's 2 paragraphs. Mm-hmm. The next paragraph right after this, the next paragraph after the fight against technological fraud is, regarding mountain bike, it was agreed that the inaugural UCI e-Mountain Bike World Championships be held at Mount St. Anne, Canada. It will take place on August 28th, 2019. It is such a cognitive dissonance. It is such a disconnect that we're talking about keeping bike racing pure. And I understand it's a completely different category. It's just funny that they couldn't put something else in there. So let's talk about kits.
Something in between those 2 things.
Yeah, let's talk about kits for a while, and then we'll talk about how we're having motorcycle races, you know, and calling them bike races. It's just crazy. It's like, this is our fight against motors and bikes, and hey, look at this. We're putting motors and bikes.
Let's see who can make the best motor. Yay.
So,
yeah, there should have been a talk about the refreshments and that you're going to serve.
the races. That being said, I'm kind of looking forward to Mount St. Anne and seeing the first e-bike mountain bike world championship.
It might be. I don't know. We'll see. Who knows? I think it's going to depend a lot on the course.
If they're racing on the World Cup course, which I'm sure they are, it's a kind of an old school natural course with some white knuckle features on it. So it should be fun. It's a tough
on a big old heavy bike that weighs.
Yeah. Mount St. Anne's got a lot of good rocky stuff to be hucking down. Yeah. So.
Might be cool.
That and the next paragraph then is talking about the snow bike. Did you know that the UCI mountain bike snow bike international calendar has already started? There was a race in Châtel in France, February 7th, 8th. I don't know.
When does the season run?
It looks like Vars Hauts Alps is March 14th. Isola 2000 is April 2021. And then that's it. They're looking for five events to be held on several continents in 2020. There you go.
There we go. Well, we still have snow.
Yeah, you could
have one.
I think
here.
You need hills. I feel like it's a downhill race almost. Yeah.
We got lots of snow, no hills. Until you go way up north.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, hey, Bill, that was good, man.
I know. I think, look at that, hour seven. I think we did it. Boom. Hey, you know what, though?
We're getting good at this.
Yeah. One thing we should talk about before we go.
Coffee.
What?
Coffee.
And? Life insurance. Yeah.
Tell me about it. I have life insurance.
You do?
Yes.
Do you have Health IQ life insurance?
I do not, because I've had life insurance since I was like in my 20s, so I'm continuing on with that. But I have definitely gone there and looked at it, and it is very, very
And
cool.
Why, Scott, would you even spend money on life insurance?
Because you have to look at it as an investment, right?
Yeah.
And I'm an adult now. I'm adulting. I'm doing the adulting thing, Bill. Yeah. It's time to grow up and be an adult and get life insurance, protect your family and friends and all that good stuff. I have a feeling like I'm missing something that you want.
No, you're not at all. I think that. You know, the thing that about Health IQ that, you know, this type of company probably wasn't around when you did buy life insurance. The thing that they do better is that they have special rates and lower rates and get people lower rates who are health conscious, you know, who want to go out and ride their bike or run or take care of themselves, and that is something that they will use that data to then get you a lower rate on life insurance. And that's kind of why we like them and they like us, because I think the people who listen to our shows take care of themselves and they can, you know, they're on things like Zwift and on Strava and they can show this life insurance company these files and they can use that to negotiate lower rates for you on this life insurance. So that's kind of the big deal with what's good about this company. It's run in a way that's data driven and one in which you can sort of, by taking care of yourself, you can get a better deal for your life insurance. And really, all we want people to do is to go to healthiq.com/WAP for wide angle podium. And you can learn more there. You can get a free quote and you can check out the FAQ page to answer all of your questions about this. But if you haven't done that before, please do me a favor, do Scott a favor, do all the wide angle podium. I think it's something that you will benefit from, but if you go and check out that information, we also benefit from it as well. So healthiq.com/WAP.
Yeah, you fill out the survey, and I think if you get elite, then you're eligible. And if you, here's the thing we talk about, Bill. If you don't get elite, there's your fitness goal,
yep.
Right? Use that as a fitness goal then to get elite. I mean, and there you go. It'll set you up right there, and off you go. So yeah, really a cool organization that's really helped out the network a lot.
For
so
sure.
Just get over there, healthiq.com/WAP.
WAP. Let's talk about some coffee.
Oh, I just finished my second cup of Grim Poor Brothers. Hello, cyclocross friends.
I like it. It's a good morning. Espresso. Normally, like an espresso blend, I wouldn't, are going to be too sort of dark for me. But that one, yeah, it's got a nice flavor to all of Dan over at Grim Poor Brothers. The selection of beans that he has, yep, just are right in my wheelhouse for the type of coffee that I like. And I am, Scott, I'm a little snobby about my coffee. And this meets the grade. I will say that despite the irony is that despite having the Hello Cyclocross Friends coffee, if I had to choose, I really like the Full Schleck.
Yeah, I usually will have the Full Schleck if I'm making coffee, and I'll have Hello Cyclocross Friends if I'm using the espresso
Perfect.
Machine and gonna
it's
make
the way
a,
you're supposed to do it.
Gonna make a latte or yeah. something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. But espresso is just it's just the way the thing that the manufacturer of the coffee recommends. It's not like, oh my God, you can't make regular coffee with espresso blends. It's okay. It's just coffee beans, right? It's still just coffee beans, and you can do it however you want and however it tastes best to you. Hello Cyclocross Friends is labeled as an espresso, but make it however you like it, and you'll probably like it no matter how you make it, to be honest.
Yeah, so. If you go to the wideanglepodium.com site, and over on the right-hand side, you'll see the link to Grim Poor Brothers, or you can just go straight to grimpoorbrothers.com/product/WAP coffee will get you directly to our coffee, but you can just go to Grim Poor Brothers, check out everything that Dan has to offer. He's got a great subscription plan, so you don't even have to worry about running out of coffee. You know that monthly it's going to be waiting for you at your front door. And
and all its aromatic goodness.
And that's the kind of thing too. You get that package, just makes everything smell that much better. So check out Grimper Brothers. And while you're over at Wide Angle Podium, please become a member. We'd love to have you. Scott and I put a lot of time in putting this content together. We love having it out there for you. We love that it starts conversations and that you all get involved and give us your feedback. And that is huge. And it makes it even nicer if you can say that you are part of that organization. And to do that, you just need to go to wideanglepodium.com and click on the Become a Member banner, which is over there on the right-hand side. And then you can, much like your coffee subscription, you are going to get something that's going to make you feel awesome every day. You can go from $5 on up one time if you want to contribution, but we would love to have you be a member. We can, from that you'll get our newsletter as well that comes out monthly. We're really starting to build that into something that is going to get you a lot of great substantive information. We're not trying to sell you stuff. We're just trying to share all the good stuff that's going on in the network from those newsletters and sharing it with our members.
Speaking of Wide Angle Podium,
yes.
Bill. You know, there's this show called The Slow Ride.
I've heard of it.
For some reason, those guys have all kinds of trouble with their campy shifters.
Oh, yes.
Little guy, Tim. I don't know what they're doing over there, man. So next on the next Bike Shop CX, I just rebuilt a campy 10-speed shifter of mine that had a broken paddle. So I had to replace the paddle. So that is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. We are going to try and come to the rescue of the Slow Ride podcast.
Thank goodness.
And talk about rebuilding 10-speed campy shifters. Yeah, thank goodness. I mean, they need it. They need the help. So,
are you going to rebuild SRAM shifters too and Shimano shifters?
No, not on this show, but I could do the SRAM ones too. Why? You have a broken SRAM
shifter?
No,
I thought
shifter?
That was always the thing that people are always like, oh campy, yes. You can rebuild everything. Why doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll get a bunch of flack from the Shimano people about that. But no, SRAM shifters have actually become more rebuildable.
All right.
So, yeah.
I'm showing once again my ignorance on stuff. I just sort of passingly know something about, but not really.
But you are right. Campy is still the king of rebuildability. So there you go.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So check that out on Bike Shop CX. Check out great shows continuing to come out from the gravel lot. Also from Consummate Athlete. They got Anthony Clark on gravel lot, and then Meredith Miller.
Yeah,
they're just moving into the whole cyclocross. The other. Oh, look at this! Look at this. As current as today, it's also a little bit of a piece here. Show on how to brew great coffee on the Wide Angle Podium Network. That's pretty cool.
Who did that?
I don't know. I'm learning stuff just from going here. It is an article. It's not a show. It's an article from Dan. Everybody go check this out. Go to wideanglepodium.com. It's under How to Brew. It's right there on the front page. This is amazing. And go check out.
I'm going straight over there.
Check out the article that Dan did on the best way to brew your coffee. Love it.
Because if you've never seen him on social media brewing coffee, it is a science and an art to Dan making coffee. Yeah. I mean, anybody doing pour overs at Nationals, I mean, he's at Nationals. It's a lot of people, and he's taking the time to do pour overs for every single person.
There are pictures of that in here.
Yeah.
He's double fisting it.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Awesome. So there you go.
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Where can people get a hold of you?
Oh, you can get a hold of me, Scott Diedenbach. Check me out at Bike Shop CX on Instagram is usually the best place. Or if you have a tech question for Bike Shop CX, just send it to bikeshopshow@gmail.com. What about you,
Bill? You can get a hold of me and the show by email at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also check out cxhairs.com. My ongoing saga of website issues sort of hit me again for the last couple of weeks. This time it was more of a technical issues, storage issues type stuff. We got all that worked out, and we have more posts coming up there, more cyclocross posts. Ethan Glading's, I think, got a couple more big pictures on there. I have one more derp from Andrew Giuliano to get posted to see how. The stunning conclusion of the Derp series, basically his his antics and travails of racing inside the pro cyclocross fields for the last few races over in Europe. So those are a lot of fun. The last one will be up there. Also on Twitter at CXAirs. Also on Instagram. And I'm less than 2 weeks away from heading out to California and starting the mountain bike season. I'll have stuff up on YouTube. Also going to be following around the Cliff Pro team. So give them a follow on Instagram because we'll have a lot of cool stuff up there. And mountain biking. That's where we're going. Scott, always awesome to talk to you. Thanks for making the time. And let's...
Yeah, Bill. Well, I'll see you on, what'd you say?
April 7th when we talk about the domestic schedule.
There we go.
See you later.